Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Anybody, anywhere, anywhere.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome into Take Command with Logan Paulson, who spent a decade in the National Football League. I'm Grant Paulson. You can listen to me on 106.7 The Fan. Watch Take Command on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube, the Team 980 YouTube channel as well. If you like to see our mugs in high definition, producer Evan O'Brien is alongside. Logan, we're dropping this on a Monday, and it's Home Run Derby Monday in Major League Baseball. Did you ever play with anybody that was like a really good baseball player or star? I've always found that most of the time in football, if you were to drop a football player in the batting cage, like, they don't know what to do with a bat in their hands. It's not one of those crossover sports. But every now and then you got to get a, like a Russell Wilson or a dude that was drafted. Did you ever play with someone that was a particularly good baseball player?
I think D. Hall was supposed to be supposedly pretty good. I never saw him play, but really? I think he was drafted. Because I remember the reason I know this is like we're getting ready to talk about the lockout 2010. And, you know, the CBA is talking through. They're like, okay, guys, let's make sure we take care of our money. Let's save it up this year, especially the young guys. We don't know how long the lockout's going to be, blah, 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 blah. And DL puts his hand up. It's like, hey, man, what if I want to go play baseball? And the guy was so aghast. He was like, yeah, I mean, I guess if you wanted to do that, you could. He's like, all right, cool. And then, like, the meeting went on. But I talked to somebody about it afterwards. They said, oh, yeah, he was drafted. He was a really good player. And, you know, he was kind of had that natural athleticism, obviously, D. Hall, and obviously the confidence that a lot of baseball players have.
I didn't know that. I remember him, I feel like years ago, he came on my show and said he was at Nats Park and he had, like, taken BP or something like that. Mm. So there's enough crossover there that I believe you. I don't remember him being drafted. That's crazy. That's pretty cool. But, yeah, Home Run Derby. Always been one of my favorite events on television to check out. I think that'd be one of the coolest things to do in sports. Like short list, sack in a big spot coming off the edge, like taking a quarterback down with the stadium roaring and getting off the field or forcing a fumble to seal a game, hitting a ball over the fence like 450 feet would just be amazing.
Elite, yeah.
Well, there's probably others. Maybe a game-winning shot at the buzzer in basketball where you just throw your hands in the air at like midcourt and get mobbed.
Yeah.
Those are a few of the
Well, it's so funny. Like you were talking about the crossover and, you know, everyone talks about, oh, like football players are really good athletes and basketball players are amazing athletes. But I personally think the hardest thing to do is like hit a baseball. Like I think about that. Like if you said, hey, Logan Paulson, can you go play basketball right now? Yeah, I'd be probably fine, you know, for the most part. But like if you said, hey, go hit like an 85 mile an hour fastball, like that's going to be a little bit dicey. Like just in terms of hand-eye coordination, the rotational power, it's such a specific skill set, like not only physically, but like mentally, like I just can't get past it. And so like, I find that to be like, again, I'm not a huge baseball guy, but it's such a difficult skill to master. It's always cool when you see somebody just crank that thing.
I think there's two, right? There's hockey because of the ice skating element where like, you just can't, like you learned how to ice skate to your credit and play hockey. But like most guys are, they're a Rottweiler on a linoleum floor, you know?
It's yeah, just, right.
Slipping and sliding all over the place and just limbs everywhere. Like nobody knows how to ice skate. So that one in terms of football crossover or just generally like if we're comparing what sport is hardest. But yeah, I think the skill hitting a baseball is insane.
It's even insane.
Throwing a baseball for guys, if it's not a natural thing. I was at the park with the Nats the other day and AJ DeBonta was there throwing out the first pitch. He did an okay job. He got it over, kind of lobbed it in from the mound. 60 feet, 6 inches, but he was clearly nervous. Maybe isn't the right word, but he was like taking it super seriously and
yeah, right.
Practice throws in and using a glove and he didn't really know what he was doing. And I just think it's an unnatural thing that a lot of guys haven't done. And then you get up on a mound and it's like, you're falling off a cliff throwing the ball. It's very odd. But I will say this. I had a charity mushball tournament years and years ago for the radio show. And I think you couldn't come if memory serves. I don't remember, but you were somewhere. But we got a couple of guys that I was like close with on the team came out and helped us play in this thing. And Kedrick Golston came, and I think Will Montgomery posted and a couple of guys. And I'm telling you, it's hilarious because you're right about hitting a baseball, but like these dudes hit nukes in this. It's kind of like softball, but the ball's like mushy, so you really have to hit it on the screws or else it like wobbles and spins, and it's just a fun little thing. If you've never seen it, look it up. But it's just hilarious because Kedrick hit one over the fence in that game.
Really?
And like, yeah, and just like, what a athlete. You know, it was like
People sleep on Kedrick because, like, this is so I sleep on Kedrick because I didn't realize this, but he was like the number one athlete coming out of Georgia before he got in a car accident. And so then he had to get like a hip replacement and like something else going on, like when he was like in his late teens, early 20s, and then like figured out how to move with this like really comprehensive surgery. So, like, before that happened, apparently he was like his old high school coach came and talked to us, and he was like, oh, yeah, I've never seen anything even close to resembling Kedrick Golston. Like, and you know, obviously like the tables were leveled a little bit with the car accident or whatever, but yeah, people sleep on how athletic that he was when he was like really rolling.
That was the first thing I thought of when you talk about it. It's not hitting a baseball. It's like lobbing pitches in there, but there were two home runs hit in that game. And I think it was like Kedrick Golston and Will Montgomery. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just like those dudes just hit nukes to dead center field. And I'm like, wow. What a ridiculous thing. But we got business to tend to. So a couple of things I wanted to get to today. I wanted to look at some guys who need to make a leap, and then also some veterans that maybe are going under the radar a little bit on this episode to kick off a new week of Take Command. So here's the list I put together of the younger players on the team that I think have to have significant leaps this season. You can start where you want to, and we can work our way through this. But I wrote down five names. I've got Josh Connerly, first-round pick, up-and-down rookie year, massive potential to be a star at tackle, but he's got to connect some dots. Then I've got Ben Sinnott, for obvious reasons, year three, a little bit of a now-or-never candidate, I would say. Similarly, Johnny Newton, who was taken 36th overall with a lot of hype as a pass-rushing, pocket-collapsing D-tackle, who just hasn't shown up very often the last few seasons, a couple seasons. Then I've got Luke McCaffrey because it's a little bit of a, all right, at the end of this year, we're going to know if McCaffrey's a mainstay fixture at wide receiver, if he's more back of the roster, kick returner, fifth receiver type. And then the last one I've got is Mikey Sanra still. He almost isn't like the others and doesn't really fit on this list because he was so good as a rookie. But he did take a step back last year. He's mostly been awesome on the outside, and where he struggled has been on the inside. I don't even know if he really belongs here, but I just think because year one was so good and then year two was a little bit uneven, like I think there's a potential that he could actually be a standout and like a 10-year stud. But after last season, there's questions about that. So your thoughts on the list that I put together?
First off, I love the list. I think you found people that like need to, you know, like kind of take steps forward for this team to be what they can be, and all kind of to different degrees. And so like, let's start with Connerly. Like we've talked about him a lot. He's one of my kind of most, you know, like kind of pet cat players on the team in terms of like, I like him. I liked his trajectory coming into last year. But, you know, like one of the things we've talked about with this Commanders team is like, you know, the skill positions, there's no big name. It's kind of going to be taken care of an aggregate. You know, obviously you got Terry Chig is going to be a little bit of a projection. Antonio Williams, you know, you talk about the running back room, tight end, obviously kind of same thing, but the kind of the staple of this team was going to be the offensive line, right? You got Laremy Tunsil, you got, you know, Cosme in there, and Connerly is a piece that we've talked about in that kind of role as kind of someone that's going to take a step forward and kind of, you're going to have those three cornerstone pieces of the offensive line. And that's going to be a position group you can hang your hat on. But, you know, like you've said, and we've talked about on this show, is he has to take that step forward. And we saw flashes of it, but the thing that separates flashes and kind of, you know, an okay player from a great player is the consistency. So can he bring that same consistency that we saw in the last half of the season from a pass protection standpoint, from a run blocking standpoint to this season? I think yes. But if that doesn't work out, this thing that was supposed to be a staple or a cornerstone of the entire team isn't going to work out. And I think that's going to put a lot more pressure on the quarterback, on the play caller, on the receivers to win matchups that they didn't have to win kind of when we first were talking about how good this offensive line could be.
Yeah, that's what's important here, if we're being honest, is just like getting the most out of him because it's a pivotal position and Daniels benefits and everything around him benefits. I think it's also really important for this front office, though, that that pick turns into having been a significant win. You know, like the floor still to me is that he's going to be a solid NFL player. I don't see a world where Josh Connerly isn't a legitimate starter in the league. Like he's just too athletic. There's too many good things that he does. But when you draft a tackle in the first round, and I know this isn't pick 8, this is pick 29, with his upside, the way that they felt about him, I do think that like the expectation is bookend for a long, long time, especially when you're starting on the right side. You know, oftentimes you take a tackle. I know right versus left has changed a little bit. 10 years ago, we viewed drafting a right tackle differently than a left tackle. But in the first round, to draft a guy who played on the left side, kick him over to the right, if you're not a top half of the league right tackle there, it's just not going to feel like a win for me where they took him at pick 29. There's also the video that we saw where, you know, the reaction in the room, like this was clearly the guy they wanted. They really targeted him. They were sure about him. Remember the anecdote from draft night where now no longer with us, offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury basically left a note on the desk of Adam Peters and was like Josh Connerly or bust, like it was some movie from draft day or something. So like, this is not a player that they're like, ah, well, what do we do here? They just took the guy we wanted. I will take Connerly. Like, no, this is the dude that they were targeting the entire time. So you just want those picks to be right. You know, in that draft,
Yeah. They
only had two picks in the first three rounds. Looks like they got Amos right in the second round, but they haven't had enough of those hits, right? I mean, Johnny Newton at 36, Ben Sinnott at 53, Coleman still a backup at 67 from their first draft class. So you just want to hit a ball over the wall to stick with the home run derby theme. And I'm hoping Connerly gives him that.
Yeah, and I think he's probably of this group you laid out, maybe the most significant in terms of his impact. And so, like, that's one that you kind of circle and kind of say, like, I think this is going to go really well. I think it's going to improve a lot. I love how he approaches it. I think he's got the right kind of student mentality. All the physical tools are there. Just can he take that step? And I think that's – I'm almost going to put that in pen in terms of something I believe. But like you said, like, if he doesn't, like, I think it's going to not only affect the current status of the roster, but it's going to, you know, kind of one of those things where you look back on and say, man, maybe – could have gone a different direction with the pick kind of deal. So,
all right, I'm going to separate the Sanristil part because, as I said, there's layers to that one. I think he's already kind of proven how good of a player he can be. But of the four that have to make a leap, so you said Connerly is the one that you're writing in pen.
Yeah.
With Ben Sinnott, are we using pencil, pen, or Sharpie that he's going to do it this year? And what does it look like if he does?
So I think it's, you know, like in terms of players that have to make the leap, I think I kind of put Mikey and Connerly in the same bucket. I think they play positions of extreme value. I think they're going to have big roles. And if they take a step, you're going to feel it right away. I think the thing with Ben is, you know, we've talked about this a ton, is I think that like in this offense, he can take a step. I think it fits his skill set more. I think it kind of fits what he did in college more. I think it's going to help him tremendously, the scheme, right? We talked about the scheme with the receivers in the last show. I think it's going to help him a ton. I think, however, they've insulated that position enough with Ben, John Bates and Chigakonkwo to say that he doesn't have to take the biggest step. You're not going to feel it the same way. Now, if he ends up getting 25 catches or something like that would be absolutely huge for this team. And I think that's something that's in the cards. But I don't know if it's as important as those other two guys we just mentioned. So I'd say yes, he's going to take a step forward. I just don't know how much the fan base is going to feel it. Now, does that affect the long-term projection at the position? Possibly. But I think
let me go back to something you just said really quick. Sorry.
Yep.
When you say how much they're going to feel it, is that because it might be in the way of like blocking and doing other things and it's not just catches and yards? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that's what I mean. I think he's going to be, you know, utilized in a way where it's like, hey, first and second down, I'm going to be the F. I'm going to play. I'm going to do some insert stuff, going to run some counters, maybe some kickouts on powers, do some inline stuff where like Chig's off the field or in 13 personnel, he's kind of removed from the formation. I think that's going to be a big part of it, maybe a little bit more pass pro. And I do think he'll be able to be used as a weapon. But the thing that always gets me is how much do you use or do you spend time trying to cultivate targets for the third guy in that room, even if he does earn that spot? So I think he'll play more. I think this offense fits him better. But, you know, like I said, if he gets 15 to 25 catches, like that would be huge. And I don't know if fans will feel that necessarily or be like, oh, my gosh, Ben has arrived. But that would be a big piece for the offense. And I also think it's a little bit of a canary in the coal mine. If he is successful, it just shows that the offense is healthy. It's on the field. We're finding ways to get other people more touches, like the ball is distributing nicely. So I think his breakout will be more a result of the offense as opposed to like something that he's doing specifically, if that makes sense.
The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so I'm going to tread lightly here because yep. 15 to 25 catches would feel like a major disappointment for me.
Really?
I mean, he's. Well,
I think the question though is like, where did even if he is, even if he comes out and has a great offseason, like where do the targets come from? Right? You just paid.
So it's, Chig, so it's a good question, which I'll get to that in a second. But here's my question, I guess, for you on Sinnott. I guess what I'm wondering is it time to change my sight line? Like my original thought was when you draft a tight end in the second round, this should be a piece in your passing game who's like a weapon. Have we moved past that? Like that to me, they did not draft him to be like, oh, he's a good blocker who can. That's John Bates who was drafted in the 15th round, I'm sure, the fifth round. But like, you get my question. I mean, when they drafted him, they're talking about Kittle and Juszczyk. Like, now Juszczyk's a different guy than Kittle, obviously, but like those are weapons. So I'm thinking if it goes well this year, he turns into a weapon. He's like a, you know, maybe a 35 catch guy or something like that. And defending is the point. That's not really what this is. Like we need to just prepare for that or no.
So I do think that like when you look at his physicality and you look at when he touches the ball, now he hasn't touched the ball a ton, but when he does get at those opportunities, there's something there. Like the comparison to George, the comparison to Kyle, I think is warranted from a physicality standpoint. But when you're talking about the tight end position, there's more nuance there. Like George has route running nuance. He's cultivated that, right? He's got, you know, and the offense that he was in allowed him to slowly grow into that role. I do feel like, and Trey McBride's another great example. We've talked about it on the show too. Like, I do feel like the offense that he's been in the past 2 years, I'm talking about Ben Sinnott, has kind of stunted his ability to develop as a pass catcher. So to me, this is almost like you're going back to like, you just drafted him. It's year one. Like, what does this look like? But now instead of him having a clear path to kind of touches and targets on the field, like you have Chigakonkwo, who's kind of, I don't want to say blocking him, but I think is a more dynamic pass catching weapon. So for this season, I think Ben could take a step forward potentially, right? But I do think the sight line needs to change because just like I asked you before, like where do you get targets? Like I'm not putting him on the field on third down over Chig, over Antonio Williams right now. I don't think he's earned that yet.
So, and he hasn't. And I agree with that. That's a different conversation. And we'll have that one second, which is like, where do the targets come from? But I guess here's the best way I can think to ask my question. In a perfect world where he is the number one option, could he catch 65 balls in the league?
In a perfect world, you know, I always think about, yes, there is a perfect world where that can happen.
Because, like, my point is, and maybe you'll disagree with me, like, if the answer to that is no, then it didn't work in the second round, if that makes sense. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think there's this thing with the tight end position where you are a product of the number of targets you get. Like, this is a deep cut, so everyone just bear with me, but there was a tight end named Carlson from Notre Dame who played for Minnesota like a year or two before I got drafted, and he had, I want to say, 55 or 60 catches one or two seasons in Minnesota, and he was like the guy, just getting a lot of touches, a lot of targets, play action shots, and was was very productive. Obviously, that was kind of an outlier year for his career, but I do think, like, with Ben, I think there's more route running athleticism on the bone that he can kind of get to. Now, he's got to mature as a route runner. He's got to mature in terms of feel. He's got to mature in terms of showing that he deserves those opportunities. And again, like, that's a lot. You know, like, I've been around the league for a long time. So if you know how hard it is to develop those relationships with the quarterback, to show the coordinator that you deserve more opportunities in the pass game. So to me, like, my sight line is, like, if he gets 20 catches this year, I'm going to be stoked. Now, the next year, could he get 35 or 40? For sure, right? He could deserve, but he needs to show that he deserves those opportunities. And that happens when you start doing the little things the right way. And we've talked about this, or I've talked about this other places. Like, there were times last year, the year before, we're like, this is not, what he's doing right now is not good enough. And at some point, we're going to get there. And, like, this offense, I think, puts him in an environment where that's much more likely to happen. And so I'm excited for Ben, but I just don't think that, like, his impact is going to be felt or needed, quite honestly, the same way those other two guys are.
Yeah, I think that's my point. Like, in a world where Chig's not around or available, does he get 50 plus catches? And it sounds like the answer would be no. And I guess that's where my frustration is.
Yeah.
But let's have the other conversation now, because it might be more important. And that is the targets conversation, which I think is totally true and fair. Like, people are expecting this. He's got to break out. He's going to have this monster season. How? Where is it coming from? I think that's a good point, because I think first, the thing that we don't always do is we act like there's this infinite number of balls. So it's like, everyone's like, all right, Terry could catch 100 balls. We want Chig to catch 70 balls. Let's get 45 balls into the hands of Sin. It's like, no. There's not enough passes.
Yeah.
So if you're working back from, on average, I don't know how many completions per game, but let's say somewhere in the mid-20s or something like that.
Sure.
I do think they're going to run the ball more and better, hopefully. So let's start with that. Then you've got 30-some pass attempts. It probably depends on how good are you. If you're a good team winning a lot of games, you're going to throw it a little bit less because you're salting games away. But, you know, in a world where you're throwing the ball upper 30s and completing, you know, mid-20s passes or something, I think with this team, you have to bake in a bunch of scrambles. Hopefully that number comes down. But those are pass attempts, dropbacks, I'll call them. Dropbacks that turn into runs from Daniels because he's not standing in the pocket making throws. I hope that number comes down. I think it will. So that's some of those attempts go away. And then you've got, we just talked about, McLaurin's going to be heavily targeted.
Yep.
The rest of the receiver position, you've got a Conquo. I've been talking all offseason about wanting to involve the running backs more. I think Blau is going to, especially with Rashad White. Does Bill factor into that? So then how many are there for Sinnott? I think it's a real question. I think it's a really good question. It's a smart way to look at it. All right, that was thorough. I think that was good on Sinnott. McCaffrey would be the next guy on this list. We've talked Connerly, Sinnott. I want to get to Luke McCaffrey and Johnny Newton. What does a big step forward look like for those guys?
You know, like when we talked about the receivers in that kind of mailbag portion of last week's or the show we did on Friday, I think the thing about Luke is he's showing more route running nuance and separation. Again, it's versus, you know, the backups on the roster, but I do think that there's something there. And so can he carve out a larger role as that two or three wide receiver on the roster? And so, you know, maybe he's not catching 50 passes, but can we get, you know, in the high 30s, low 40s? And I don't, that would be a lot, and that would be really exciting for Luke, but I don't think that's totally outside the realm of possibility. Now, that is an outcome that I think is kind of lies in terms of, like, it's definitely an outlier outcome. I think kind of like more right down the middle in terms of 20, 25 catches is probably right on the money. But I think there is something there. Now, role for him is going to be huge. And again, we talked about him as a kickoff returner. And I think from what I've seen, he's ready for a larger role in the offense. What does a larger role look like? Is it a two? Is it a three? Is it a four? Those are all roles, and those are all different, and each one would kind of result in him getting different levels of production. But I think for him, if he ends up with 35 catches, like, I'm stoked for him. Like, that's awesome, and that's big for the offense, because it goes back to what you were just talking about with targets. Like, if these guys down the board, Ben Sinnott, Luke McCaffrey, Jalen Lane, I'm throwing there also, if they're getting that kind of target share, it means the offense is on the field for a long time. We're sustaining drives. It means the offense is very, very healthy. And if that's true, That's excellent. And so again, like a healthy offense is going to raise all these guys' production metrics. So to me, yes, I think they're, I think Luke has, from what I've seen, is warranted of a larger role. Now, what does that role look like and what does the execution of that role look like? I think that's a different question and one that's much harder to answer.
Yeah, Luke at 5 catches, I think, would excite me. 29 for his career through a couple seasons. 11 catches last year would have been a bigger number if he didn't get hurt. But like, that's a number that would play for me, especially right now, not knowing his exact spot in the depth chart. Deami Brown's going to factor in, whether it's Burks or somebody else with McLaurin, with Okonkwo. I think that that plays. And I think with him, it's actually going to be easy to see. Like, some.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Some of these, it might not be as easy anecdotally just watching, but I think with McCaffrey, if he's out there, if he's getting separation, if he's routinely involved, if he's making catches, like that growth is going to be pretty obvious. He's also already cemented himself. We talked about on the last pod as a phenomenal kick returner. So it feels to me like he's done a pretty good job starting to carve something out in the league. All right, the last one would be Johnny Newton then. And those of you that listen to the show all the time or are mainstays, you know how hugely high on Johnny Newton I was and just what a big fan of this player in school I was. And then kind of how disappointing it's been since. Like, I expected every game to look like the Cowboys game where he just takes the game over and he's Warren Sapp, basically, which might not be the most fair expectation. But he's the one that I am worried about the most from a personnel standpoint, oddly. You know, we talk about Sinnott and, like, where's the volume? We talk about McCaffrey and the competition. I do think there's going to be ways for them to elbow their way into some looks.
Yes,
Johnny Newton is in a really tough battle for playing time. They paid a bunch of money to Tim Settle. Deron Payne is one of the highest paid defenders in the league at this point. Javon Kinlaw is a $15 million guy. I think Amenihu's going to get kicked inside plenty too. Like, he's not proven yet to be helpful against the run. So you got to tell me how Newton saves this a little bit here.
So I think the one thing, we're looking at Johnny and like talking with people around the league who coach defensive line, is if you can get him in a little bit more of like a penetrating style, I think it's going to help him a lot. And like if you look at what, again, the Flores defense was in Minnesota, there's a lot of that, right? And even when they're not penetrating, there's a lot of pre-snap movement where you can use that kind of athlete, like where Johnny Newton is, like, you know, he's lined up as a three technique, but he's looping outside the tackle, and that kind of movement I think is something that's going to be really helpful to him. And so, you know, when you talk to the coaching staff, they gush over Johnny Newton. It sounds like he's handling things the right way. They're really excited about him still. And I think it's a little bit unique to me because on film I'm always kind of like, I see elements, but I don't see the grand picture, which to me, it kind of goes back to your conversation we had on the last episode about like Debo and like how you are in the room. Like, to me, it seems like Johnny's a really good guy in the room, just in terms of how they talk about him. And so can this penetrating style, can we space him out a little bit, give him more opportunities to really use some of that athleticism, kind of get him out of some of the things that he struggled with last year, which is like, hey, I'm not great against double teams. I can win single blocks with some consistency, right? Can we get out of this double team world? Can we get in some movement? If that's the case, there is a role for him. Now, like, it really comes down to like how they end up kind of executing this thing. Like, obviously I was at OTAs at minicamp. Like, there's flashes and hints from stuff from Minnesota, but still, this is Durante Jones's defense. It's going to be different. Is there an element in here? And again, he's not to a point, much like the other guys, where you're going to change the defense to fit him. It's more of a question is like, does he fit the defense? On paper, I think yes, but ultimately we don't know what that thing's going to look like necessarily. So he's a really, really tough one to me for the reason you said in terms of depth, and also because, like, I think based on what Minnesota did, it seems to work, but like it might be a little bit different. And if that difference is enough, like, it could really hurt him in terms of his production this year.
Yeah. So I don't know if this is fair, but I remember one time talking to a coach, And I said, this was not a Commanders coach, by the way. And this is a long time ago, several years ago. And I said, so, you know, they're saying they really like this guy, but it just doesn't seem like it. He says, well, how many guys have they added at that position? And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, teams will always tell you, like, with their moves. Like, they're going to say what they're going to say. And I just can't help but notice, like, you've paid a bunch of money to Kinlaw. You had the ability to let Payne walk and save money, and you didn't do it. You had a priority signing in Tim Settle. Like, that is what worries me a little bit about. I'm going, well, maybe they still really think it's coming with Newton. And so that doesn't mean that they're right or that I'm reading the tea leaves correctly. Like, he's still going to get the last say on this thing. But I hope that this scheme helps him a lot. So, all right, last part of the exercise, I'll make you choose between your kids a little bit here. I think this could be kind of fun. Let's rank these dudes in the confidence you have in, like, a monster year is loading. Okay. So, again, I'm going to kick Sandra still out because as I look at it, I just think he's on a different level than these other guys. So we'll go four deep with Connerly, Sinnott, McCaffrey, and Newton. The Logan Paulson, that guy's about the ball out rankings. How do you got?
Yeah. So I'm going to go Josh Connerly, number one. I'm going to go Luke McCaffrey. And again, that might surprise a lot of people. I just think, like, from what I've seen from him, he looks different to me.
It seems like you're pumped about Luke. I'm sorry.
I am pumped. And I'm surprised. I'm surprised with myself that I'm pumped with Luke, right? Like, which is a weird thing because I'm always a little, I'm pumped on Luke. So I'm going to put him at two, Ben Sinnott, Johnny Newton in terms of confidence. And I actually think Ben Sinnott and Luke are pretty close. It's just, I don't know, like, how much 13 personnel are you going to be in? Who's going to get that 12 role on first, second down? Can he get some targets? Again, I think he plays more this year, Ben. I just don't know if it shows up in target share. But that's kind of my confidence ranking at the moment. Is it the same for you, or how do you feel about it?
I would go Connerly one for sure. That's the easiest ranking for me.
Yeah.
I kind of want to put Ben Sinnott two, honestly.
That was my big debate there, personally. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this offense is super tight end friendly. So. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I actually think Sinnott could have a better year statistically than we're letting on. But again, I've been wrong and too high on him like every step of the way. So, like, I think he's going to catch 94 balls, man. I think he's going to go 1,100 yards, 14 touchdowns. Like, that's definitely a possibility, even though they signed Chig. I think Sinnott probably over Luke. There's just an easier path. A lot of times when I do these kind of rankings,
good point.
Like, how do you get the looks? How do you get the play time? And Luke is in a battle with a lot of other guys that are in
100%. Equal footing.
Whereas I kind of see there's an unimpeded.
Like you're the three.
Recently you're the three if you're swept.
Better, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like a recently swept, like, dirt path right to opportunities for Ben Sinnott. There's, like, no logs laying in the way. So, yeah, I'll put him two. I'll put Luke three. And I hate to say it, but I guess I have Newton fourth because I feel like the play time is going to be hardest for him early on. So a little bit redundant, but similar. All right. Next on Take Command, I want to hit a mailbag question that came in that I found fun for Logan. Also, we'll tee up our topic for our next Take Command, give you a sneak preview on that as soon as we return.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.